the 49ers my number one jersey in the NFL.
Did you just clap? Did I just see you clapping right there? Could I hear you clapping?
I did. I was like, great job, Amanda. So. You nailed
great
it.
Great job,
nailed
Amanda. It. You picked the winner there. Oh, yeah, baby. Clap it up. Amen. Fareed's in the building. What's
you
going
have to
on,
be
man?
Your own
How
hype
you
man. You have to be your own hype man, Chris. You know, we're in our basements, in random rooms in our homes. There's no atmosphere. Every once in a while, I just got to pump up my room by clapping for myself.
I used to have a teammate. You want to talk about hype man, okay? I'm going to be totally transparent here because I don't think he'll care that I share this story. My man, Dwight Smith, who was one of my greatest teammates I ever played with in Tampa Bay. And for all those out there, Dwight Smith, number 26 on the Super Bowl team for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, had those two pick six in that Super Bowl late in the game against the Oakland Raiders and Rich Gannon. So I'm like a rookie, right? We become friends. He takes me under his wing. He's great to me, Ahmed. But like one of the first times ever we go out to the club, right, on a Friday night and have fun, he puts on his own jersey, right? His own jersey and puts it on backwards. So the nameplate is right here at his chest. And he had a very similar response to you. And so I went, dude, you're going to wear your own jersey to the club? And I'm like, totally like, who does that? And he goes, what? He's like, if I can't represent me, then who can? You know, and I was just like, it's a valid point. I mean, it is very true. If he can't represent himself, then who the hell can? So
ruins the joke. It ruins the joke we all tell when we see someone in a Joe Montana jersey and we say, oh, there's Joe Montana over there, because maybe it is. If he's feeling in that mood, it could have been Joe Montana. I like that. I support that. Chris, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
We were gonna have your dad on. It's become a tradition here on Thursdays now, but he's ditched us, Chris. He's bailed on us. What happened?
How dare he ditch us?
He had a good reason today.
Okay, my younger sister Deirdre, she had her third child today, a baby boy. So Big Phil is helping out with her kids and doing all that. So I think the day has kind of become crazy for Big Phil. He's not much of a daddy daycare type, all right? So either way, I'm sure he's flustered. But, yeah, he just said, okay, I need a week off. I'll come back next week. That's kind of – he was already flustered at about 11 o'clock this morning. So, yeah, would like to congratulate my sister. Two baby boys she has now, one little girl, and I hope she's done having kids. I think she is.
I have two here at home, and I feel like sometimes that was one too many. I'm like, man, these kids are a handful. They're a handful here. But yeah, congratulations to the Sims family out there. Big Phil, we'll have them on next week. But we still have a lot to talk about here, Chris. We got an AMA, the homies always coming through and supplying us with really good questions that we hadn't thought of, that makes us think and takes you down a road that maybe you hadn't previously thought of. So we'll get to those in a second. We'll also preview your top 40 is coming up pretty soon. Your top 40 quarterbacks, we'll look at that. But let's start with some news here, Chris, because I know this caught your eye with what is going on in Tampa. Not a whole lot of teams are able to do anything right now. They're not allowed to be in their facilities. Coaches outside of Zoom meetings really can't have contact with these players. That hasn't stopped Tom Brady from getting together with a handful of his new teammates in Tampa Bay. This was reported locally in Tampa Bay. He was at a local high school working out with, who was there? It was Mike Evans, his center, Ryan Jensen, Scotty Miller, right. Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, all together on a field. Tom was in like shoulder pads and practice jersey. He got the team together, at least a handful of them, which you can do in Florida, gatherings of 10 or fewer, that's allowed. He did it, Chris, and he's out there working.
Well, you know, this is what I love about Tom Brady, you know, and I know people think like sometimes that I don't like Tom Brady. Listen, I love Tom Brady, as I've told you many times before. I'm just going to keep it real. That's what I do. And if Brady does something I don't like, I'm going to say it. So, but either way, I have much respect for him. And yeah, I mean, first off, I just love this aspect of him. Here he is at a new team. It's weird times. And he's already in the conversation for the greatest quarterback ever. We know that. Most people think he is the greatest quarterback, certainly the most accomplished. We know that. I'm not going to argue that for one second. But, you know, all these accolades, and he could be sitting back in a recliner with his feet up right now. But no, He's the only quarterback I see out there with shoulder pads, helmets, rallying the team together for workouts and doing things like that to get himself better and the team better. Now, hey, listen, much respect to Dak Prescott. We've seen him in some videos and things throwing the football. Ben Roethlisberger started to do it, of course. You know, so that's encouraging. He, you know, Cam Newton, he sent out some videos to show he's healthy. But my big thing and my pet peeve here, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong or stupid, I just want to be like, what's going on? Young quarterbacks of the world, you know, all these young quarterbacks who I hear say, I want to be like Tom Brady, or I want Tom Brady's career, or Tom Brady has set the mold. Okay, you're saying that. So now look at the mold. He's molding it in front of you. Do what he does. I mean, let's go. Well, he doesn't need the work. We know he can throw the football in clutch moments and big moments like that. So that's just my big thing. You know, when I see certain quarterbacks of teams like, hey, listen, you know, I like Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, but they're out in California, you know, and I want to be like, no, that's okay if you are in California, but then get some teammates out there or get back to the East Coast, closer to your team facilities where players and teammates are living by, and start getting to work this way. This is the closest thing you're going to get to off-season work right now. And, you know, hey, a coach could text message Tom Brady 20 or 30 plays, right? And then he has them in front of him, and he can go out and run a 7-on-7 practice and do stuff like that, and they can get going. So it just, to me, is a little bit of a pet peeve, and I just don't understand why the greatest quarterback of all time is doing it and some other guys aren't.
I'm sure a big element for at least some of these players is, no one knows what's allowed right now, especially in your locale. True. You could have different rules depending on where you live, and Florida's different right now than California. And so, I mean, Dak Prescott, as you mentioned, was out on the field, but he also caught some heat a couple months ago for gathering when gathering was not really allowed. It was the most strict the policies were in America at the time. So I think that's part of it. And here's a question for you. Do you think that Tom Brady would be doing the same thing if he was still in New England? Is it just a function of him being with a new team and trying to learn his new teammates, where I know he missed the last couple OTAs with the Patriots his last couple of years there?
Yeah, I know. I think he still would be doing this. You know, do I think I would be doing this to this extent? You know, maybe not. No, this is a little different. But, you know, even within missing OTAs and things like that, I know Tom Brady has had Gronk and Edelman at certain fields. We saw Josh Gordon last year during the offseason catching footballs for him and doing stuff like that. So I think this is a very real, regular thing of Tom Brady's process of getting ready for a regular season. Now, do I think it's like maybe amped up to a different degree than maybe years past for Brady? Yeah, of course, because there is a little bit more of a rush to go, hey, this is my last 1 or 2 years in the NFL. It's a new team. I don't know any of you. I don't know the new language and the offense that way. So this is your chance to start to work out some of those kinks where, hey, Brady, he might have thrown the same route and there might have been a different coaching point in New England as compared to where Bruce Arians has it coached. And now there's going to be some dialogue between the players too. So, you know, that's a very good question by you. I don't think maybe it was this aggressive maybe when he was in New England. But, of course, he was comfortable within the offense and he knew everything that way too. But he's always been one to get work. I mean, we've seen him on vacation putting Wes Welker on the back of a golf cart so he could throw deep balls. And he's got his shoulder pad and helmet there with him then too. And, you know, to me, I just want to be like, hey, everybody wants to follow Tom Brady. Well, then follow Tom Brady. Look what he's doing. And especially the young quarterbacks, I think this is something that, you know, needs to catch fire with all quarterbacks throughout the NFL with this weird offseason.
And you'd think it'd be especially beneficial for some of the wide receivers, Mike Evans over there, getting some timing down as early and often as possible with his new main targets. Also beneficial for his new center, Ryan Jensen, who tweeted out that he has already learned something from Tom, and he played in Tampa the last couple years, so he should have already have learned this, but no. He goes, quote, first you fold the towel once, then over itself again, put it down your crack, douse in baby powder, no more ass sweat. That's advice from Tom Brady to Ryan Jensen, Chris.
Yeah, well, it's some great advice. And I wish that, you know, this is why Brady's the GOAT.
This is why we finally figured it out.
Yes. Well, this is why he is the GOAT for sure. This is a good trick. And this is a real issue, okay, as far as in playing in Tampa Bay, especially in preseason, September, early October. You know, I know, I think you and I have talked about this before, but yeah, swamp ass is a real thing. You know, again, if you got a center who's 305 pounds and he's working and having to block 320, 330 pound, you know, linemen, the ball gets sweaty. It's like a wet watermelon at times. It really is. I used to make
there you are.
John Wade. There I am. And my man, John Wade, was like the best soldier in the world. He would go in at halftime and put on a new pair of pants during the football game. And that was, I mean, you talk about, that's a pain in the butt. Like doing that, NFL halftime is, it's not a long amount of time by the time you get in the locker room and they're asking you to walk back out. So there he would be rushing to get his pants off and put a new pair of pants on. And I used to feel bad, but I used to go, I mean, damn, if they want me to complete some passes in the second half, he's got to do it. I don't know what else to tell you. It's like, you know, he used to be over the ball, dripping it with his face on it, and then snap the ball, and I would get ass juice that would fly up into my face, and of course the ball would be very wet. Yeah, it's very gross. So this is really a good trick. This is one I have never heard about or learned about or anything like that. But
you never used baby powder. Baby powder was never used by your center throughout your whole college or NFL career.
Never had the baby powder. And I really wish I would have thought of the towel thing too. I mean, the towel, of course, is going to lessen the sweat. I hope Brady is giving him organic baby powder. That's one thing I want to be. I want to make sure he's getting organic. But the other thing is, you know, I wish I would have thought that even just for the natural feel anyways, to have a little pad there for that hand instead of like feeling the actual crack and maybe the undercarriage of a man and all those type of things. That was kind of uncomfortable at times. I don't care how long you played quarterback. You're always like, oh, am I really putting my hand here and doing this? So I would think the towel would be a nice little landing spot for the hand so you don't have to feel too much there.
It's why he's the GOAT. It's why he is always in the upper echelon of your top 40 quarterback countdown list, which a quick preview of that, Chris, is that last year you created a lot of controversy when you had Tom Brady, the most accomplished quarterback of all time, as you mentioned, all the way down at number 9. It created a firestorm throughout the NFL media. Drew Brees just one spot below him there at 10. In retrospect, Chris, you should have been roasted more for Lamar Jackson at 30 than Tom Brady at 9 or 10, because you might even have had Tom Brady high at 9 when it was all said and done.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, Brady at 9 and Brees at 10 were the ones that I got the most flack of, and I want to just sit there and go, yeah, I was right. So let's back off Chris Sims on that one. You're right. The most egregious one there is Lamar Jackson. He is making a jump into the top 5. You know, listen, I'm supposed to tease this thing or whatever. You know, there's no teasing going on there. He's going to be in the top 5 this year. I can tell you that much, certainly. You know, just between the way he ran and threw the football, much improved in that area too last year. So I can say that I certainly was wrong about that one, no doubt about it. But, you know, the rest of my list, I don't feel so bad about it. As the season went on last year, I started to go, damn, my list is proven to be close as you can get as far as doing a top 40. And I'm always excited to do it.
You can't predict injuries, and so that's always going to play a part of where these quarterbacks end up at the end of the year. Matt Stafford, you had middle 15 there, but he was hurt for the biggest injury of his career so far. With Jackson, what – I forget, because I was with you when you did this last year. Why was Lamar down so far on your list? Because I know you really liked him, and you were super high on him, higher than most people when he was drafted by the Ravens. How come he was 30 on your list? Have you just not done it yet, proved it yet, I guess?
Yeah, I think that was my biggest thing. And then, you know, with the way the year ended, I did wonder whether – you know, he ran the ball really well that first year, but I wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. I mean, he was a better runner his second year, obviously. The stats will tell you that. And I think the highlights and the look will tell you that too. But, you know, I think the biggest thing was the unpolished of throwing the football, the way that Chargers playoff game looked, and a few other games late in that season where I just went, ooh, I don't know yet. And then I did think that maybe that defenses would catch up to that offense a little bit. So I wondered where it would go. And could he make it all happen? So, yeah, that really was my reasoning for it. And obviously, I was wrong there. There's no doubt about it.
Some of it is unforeseen. You don't know what quarterback is going to make that big leap and what quarterback is going to basically show you what they've shown you up to this point. And so Lamar Jackson certainly made that big leap. So I'm looking forward to that. We're starting it up on Tuesday. You're back with Paul, the bottom of the list there. I'm kind of curious to see where these new quarterbacks pop up for you. That's always interesting for me, the Joe Burrow, Tua, right. Justin Herbert. I imagine they'll be in the top 40 somewhere, and they could be at the bottom of the top 40. But I kind of think that a couple of those guys will be higher up.
Well, there's always the tough ones. And, you know, like, listen, people gave me crap about Drew Locke last year at 40. Well, hey, it looks like I was wrong about that. He should have been higher up the list. You know, the year before that, I got crap about having Patrick Mahomes in the top 30, right? I had Patrick Mahomes. He hadn't played one snap. I made him one of the 30 best quarterbacks in football. Well, I was right. He was one of the 30 best. He was. Actually, I was right and I was wrong because he was actually like one of the 5 or 6 best right off the bat right there. But yeah, I know it's a little bit of a projection, and I understand people like pushing back against that. But at the same time, I've been around enough and seen enough college quarterbacks and high school quarterbacks and great NFL quarterbacks and been around it to know sometimes that, hey, listen, I don't have to see this guy play. I know he's better than some of the backups in football right now. I'm not worried about that. I also got a lot of flack last year for saying Kyler Murray would be one of the 5 best scrambling quarterbacks in football. I remember people tweeting at me that they're going like, how could you say that? He hasn't even played in the NFL. Well, he ended up being the 2nd best scrambling quarterback in football this year, only behind Lamar Jackson. You know, I said it because, you know, there was enough to show in Oklahoma, and even you could see his speed and quickness that I thought, that's still going to translate to the NFL, and he'll be one of the better runners in football at the quarterback position. So, yeah, it's never easy, those guys, but I would think a few of them certainly get in the top 40.
So, Chris, can we start the AMA Ask Me Anything with some quarterback questions? Is that all right with you?
That is totally all right with me.
All right, let's go to Derek Quinn here, Chris, who it's kind of related to your top 40 countdown. He says, who do you think will be the most improved quarterback in the NFL this season? And I thought that was a really tough question because we just mentioned with Lamar, how do you know? It's really tough to say if, okay, what you did this year, I think you can do better. Unless you just go with raw talent and you've seen enough raw talent with this guy, I think he'll figure it out eventually. But how would you go about tackling that question?
Yeah, that's a tough question. You're right, because there's a lot of projection involved into that. But I mean, right when you ask the question, there's two names that pop to my head right off the bat. Hey, one, Kyler Murray, because yes, I mean, to what you just said, Ahmed, you've seen it. You're not an NFL scout or a coach, but you know, damn, that guy looks good when I watch him on TV. Right. And I would expect him, who's a very motivated, mature young man, to do all the right things to be better, let alone year 2 in the NFL being used to that. DeAndre Hopkins on your roster now to help you out. I would think Kyler Murray makes a huge jump. And then the other guy is something we talked about right off the start of the podcast, Drew Locke. You know, again, Drew Locke only started a handful of games at the end of the year, but I think anybody that watched any of those Broncos games, you would come away going, man, there's something to this kid. You know, the ball looks, you know, special when it pops out of his hands, and he can move around and make some plays on the run and do those type of things. And then, again, like a Lamar Jackson or anything like that who we've seen make big jumps, there's a support system there. And that Denver offense is one that I'm about as excited as any offense in football. So those would be two right off the bat that I look at. You know, because, hey, when you talk about Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler and Noah Fant and Cortland Sutton and getting Melvin Gordon with Phillip Lindsay at running back, hey, I feel like you put me a quarterback there. I can do some good things, not Drew Locke good things, but could do something. But I think those are two that jump out to me maybe more than any other for big years. And I'll throw Derek Carr maybe out there and be another one I'd say to watch out for. Yeah, I'd say watch out for
Because I was going to say, you see a lot of those players the rookie year and then that sophomore season to make that big jump, and so that makes more sense. And I was wondering if there are some veterans out there, even like a Jameis Winston, if he gets a chance to play under Sean Payton and can improve his game, elevate his game. But, yeah, why do you say Derek Carr?
Because I think Derek Carr has played better football the last 2 years than maybe me or the media or the public have given him credit for. you know, I think the fact that we don't think he actually his style or, you know, his personality meshes with John Gruden, we're all just waiting for that moment to say, ah, see, I knew it wouldn't work, you know. And it hasn't been perfect, but it hasn't been bad by any stretch of the imagination, let alone it hasn't been a great support group around him either at the wide receiver position. So they've made some improvements at that position. Of course, drafted Henry Ruggs, you know, Josh Jacobs being in year two, that offensive line's good. They got one of the best young tight ends in football and Darren Waller there already. So I just look at that and go, okay, Derek Carr, another year in that system. They've put some more pieces around him. He's played better than people realize to begin with the last 2 years. I could see him coming away and making a big jump this year. I think those are three that jump to me more than any.
Yeah.
And then if you want one that I think people will think is a jump, all right, I didn't even think this answer would be this long, but for the same reasons as Josh Allen. Josh Allen in Buffalo. I don't know why some people don't want to give him credit yet. I don't understand that. But ultra talented, unbelievable arm, one of the best runners in the sport. And now they have Stephon Diggs, and they got a Zach Moss at running back to go with Devin Singletary, and it's his second year in that system. So I think those are four that really jump out to me to make big leaps.
I knew Josh Allen was going to make it in there. I almost predicted it right off the top there. I knew he was going to be in your potential improvers list. This one comes from Dan Woolsey, and this is similar, but it's about Mitchell Trubisky. With him regressing, who is most responsible? Matt Nagy seemingly is trying to force Mitch into something he isn't. Why wouldn't Nagy play more of a run-controlled offense and let Mitch use his legs? With a great defense, that would make the most sense. So thoughts here on Mitchell Trubisky and why it hasn't worked out with Chicago. A quarterback who, Chris, you were not real high on when the Chicago Bears took him with, what, the number two overall pick back in the day.
Yeah, right. You know, and again, I still thought it could work, certainly. And I don't want to give up on that. I think there are things to like about Trubisky's game, but yeah, there's some things that certainly need work. There's no doubt about that. You know, we've talked about it many times, just not a consistent enough, accurate thrower of the ball where you just go, that should be a slam dunk completion and it's an incomplete pass. You know, some carelessness at times, things like that. I think, okay, if I was going to put the blame, right? So rookie year, I want to blame Ryan Pace a little bit in his rookie year. I think that led to the start of the negative conversations around Mitchell Trubisky because as a rookie, Mitchell Trubisky had nobody around him to help him. Nobody. I mean, there was nothing. I've said this many times on the podcast where I've gone, like, you have to go back and watch film of Mitchell Trubisky's rookie year where you'll go, man, they started Tariq Cohen at wide receiver some of those weeks because they only had one good receiver to start, so they had to make a backup running back the other starting receiver. You know, that's never going to give, like, the public and the team following and everything like that a ton of confidence in a guy right off the bat because, yeah, it was a little bumpy that year. You know, there was a lot of bumps in the road. They weren't smooth offensively. It didn't look good. And as you know, and anybody that follows football, people start to blame the quarterback when that happens, and that's not fair. So I think that gave everybody the jump off, right? And then, hey, Nagy came to town, and things went well and did all that first year. There's a great defense, and I think the offense caught people by surprise. But the second year in the system, you know, people caught up to it. Matt Nagy did not evolve in his first to second year in Chicago. Basically just ran the same exact stuff. And I think within that, you know, to answer the question specifically, yeah, I blame Matt Nagy the most for two reasons. One, I don't think he's been supportive enough of Mitchell Trubisky, especially early on his first year. Hey, I always point to that graphic in that Green Bay game and Matt Nagy's first game as a head coach. Trubisky's running on the field, and there's a quote on the bottom from Matt Nagy that says, can't put in my full offense with this quarterback. You know, oh, that's great. That'll really give the fan base confidence in your guy. You know, so
yeah.
I never looked at that as being a real confidence builder for everybody, all right? But either way, the point is last year, they did not play through their defense. They couldn't run the ball. They showed no creativity and physicality in the run game at all. And they acted like they were the Kansas City Chiefs, except, that's right. There is no Tyreek Hill, no Travis Kelce, no Sammy Watkins, no Mecole Hardman. and no Patrick Mahomes on the roster, and the offensive line is not as good as Kansas City either. So you can't be the Kansas City Chiefs. You got to play to the strength of your football team. And, you know, that to me is where they messed up last year. They tried to still throw it and spread it around and do those type of things where they should have been playing more of a ball control, run Mitch Trubisky, high percentage passes, play through the defense and win games 20-17. And they didn't do that. And, of course, it led to a lot of losses.
And now you have Nick Foles over there. What's your over-under for games started for Mitchell Trubisky this year?
Oh, I'm going to go zero.
8.5?
I mean,
well, you don't think he'll start any?
I
think he'll lose the job in training camp?
I do. I, you know, the way I look at it right now, I feel like it's a no-win situation for Mitchell Trubisky. You know, if they start him week one, if he doesn't come out and throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, you know, everyone's going to blame him. I mean, no matter what it is. If he even plays good and they lose, he's going to get blamed. The first time he throws a few incompletions, the boo birds are going to be out. Get Nick Foles in there. Trubisky, you suck. All that stuff. So if I'm the Bears, I'd rather go the other way around. Let's go with Nick Foles. Let's see what he does. If he fails, then the fans have no, like, there's no nothing else they can do. Hey, Trubisky's the guy. He's got to come in now. The other guy failed. He's not that good. And now maybe the fan base can get behind that. But I think he's kind of in a no-win situation to be throwing him out there as a starter right now. What do you think?
Like,
am I wrong? What do you think?
I hadn't thought of that before, but I like that a whole lot. I think you're exactly right. From day one, if Mitchell Trubisky is your starter, you're just waiting for Nick Foles to come in. Might as well get that train rolling early and then go back to Mitchell after that. I think that makes a whole lot of sense.
Thanks. Thanks for backing me up. I appreciate it.
I always support you. If there's a controversy out there, Chris, I will support you, no matter what that is. Let's go to Jimmy Garoppolo.
There's a few out there.
Let's go to Jimmy Garoppolo here because he's another quarterback. I would say, you know, maybe in a similar light as Mitchell Trubisky. Obviously had a whole lot more success last year in the Kyle Shanahan offense, taking him to the Super Bowl, but still some questions on how good he can be. This one comes from A-Dub-Zero. He goes, what's up with Jimmy G and the deep ball? Is Kyle Shanahan getting all those yak guys because he knows Jimmy cannot throw deep? So I looked at some of the numbers here, Chris. Pro Football Reference, and it was true. Jimmy Garoppolo was aided by the yards after the catch more than any other quarterback out there.
Yeah.
Yards after the catch per completion. He was 6.6 yards per completion. Ryan Tannehill was 2. But then Patrick Mahomes was 3. So I was like, oh, that's a good group to be in. I also looked at yards traveled downfield per pass. Jameis Winston, 1. Ryan Tannehill was 4. So he still was throwing the ball down the field, even though he was aided by the yards after the catch. Patrick Mahomes was 9th. Jimmy Garoppolo was 24th, just ahead of Kyle Allen. So he was not throwing the ball down the field like those other quarterbacks. So what is it? What's the deal with Jimmy G? Is Kyle protecting him, or is that just his offense?
Great stats, first off. Those are great references, right? You know, they really are. And it's great, you know, because it doesn't always tell the whole story. You know, people, if they just heard your first stat, they would have gone, oh, see, Ryan Tannehill, he just throws the ball short and the other guys run. And then you go, oh, actually, no, he was in the top 3 in ball yards traveled in the air, too. So, you know, maybe it was a little bit of both. You can do both. That's very real. And really good quarterbacks are great in the short passing game to throw a ball right pinpoint accuracy to where the wide receiver can run after the catch seamlessly, right, and not have to slow down or stop or regather himself or any of that.
Sure.
So that's real. So those are great stats. You know, one, I think it is Kyle Shanahan's offense. It is. That's always been part of his offense. Whether you go back to Washington, Houston, whatever it may be, he's always recruited, drafted the type of receivers that, you know, like I always say, can snatch the ball out of the air, be aggressive over the middle and have no fear and adjust the pedals to the metal 100 miles per hour like you see with Deebo Samuel. It's a big part of his game. We know the running game of Shanahan's famous. His play action passes off it are also famous. And a lot of them hit right over the middle of the field. I know that you and I during the season last year, when we talked about defending the San Francisco 49ers, I always used to say, I'd crowd the middle of the field. I'd make Jimmy Garoppolo throw the ball down the field or outside the numbers, one of the two, because you don't see it a lot. And I don't think also it's a great strength of Jimmy Garoppolo. So, one, it is the offense of Shanahan. But, two, it's definitely an area of you know, needed improvement from Jimmy Garoppolo. It is. He has some mechanical issues of throwing the deep ball that I've never liked. You know, the first thing I'll talk about is he's not aggressive enough with his lower body with a lot of the deep balls down the field. He has this thing he does in dropping back the pass where he never takes a hitch step. He never takes that gather step we talk about. He kind of takes a five-step drop. He just sits there. He plants his feet in the ground, and he kind of just tries to torque his body and make throws like that, which can be good because it can help you to get the ball out of your hand quick and all those type of things. Yes, but with great power throws, man, that's going to compromise your power and your accuracy if you're not using your lower body. And, yeah, that's been an issue, like you saw the deep posts in the Super Bowl, but other games sure. too, where, yeah, he's just not a great deep ball thrower. And there's some things that I think mechanically, like I said, that he could fix to help that. But it is part of Shanahan's offense to get those type of guys too. He's not doing it going, oh, Jimmy can't throw the deep ball, so I need to get these type of receivers in. No, Shanahan's getting the receivers he likes, and hopefully he can get Jimmy Garoppolo to get better at throwing the deep ball.
And you wonder, these are professional athletes, the top physical specimens in the world. They should be able to change stuff like that. It's easier said than done, it seems like, for a lot of players, especially if you've created a habit over the years and you get in the heat of the moment in a game with a 300-pound defensive lineman chasing you and you throw
sure,
all the
right.
stuff you learned a week ago out the window. But it seems like those are things that Jimmy Garoppolo could improve upon. Are you optimistic about that?
I really am optimistic. It's really a very easy thing to fix, too, because it's not like we're asking him to, like, readjust his throwing motion, right? Or this is like Tim Tebow sure. or some other guy where we're going, man, there's a huge mechanical flaw, and I don't care how much we work on it, like to what you said, when the bullets start flying for real again, you're always going to resort back to that old motion. Yeah, more times than not, I would say that. But Garoppolo is a natural thrower of the football. He is. He's very good with just the fluidity, his arm angles, things like that. This is just about paying attention to your feet, getting that back leg underneath you to where you're in a power position to throw the ball high and far in the air, to where that's a big part of the deep ball. We've been discussing this on PFT a little bit the last few weeks. You want to be a good deep ball thrower? Throw the ball high. It gives you more room for error. It lets the receiver run and adjust to it. DBs are not good at adjusting the balls. They usually choke or panic when the ball's up in the air and stumble all over themselves, or you even get pass interference. So I would hope my buddy Kyle Shanahan works on that with Jimmy Garoppolo this training camp if we have one.
I'm going to remember that when I become an NFL quarterback. That's a good piece of advice right there. I'm going to just throw the ball.
No problem.
Higher.
I have my moment.
So this one comes from Feet on Twitter. His name is Feet, F-E-E-E-T, so an extra E in there. Who is going to crash the playoffs is his question. So I think he's asking which team that was not in the playoffs this past year has the best chance of getting there. So over in the AFC, here are the teams that just missed out. Steelers, Broncos, Raiders, Colts, Jets. Those last four all finished 7-9. In the NFC, Rams missed out at 9-7. Bears, Cowboys, Falcons, and Buccaneers. So of those teams, who do you think is most likely to crash the playoff party this year?
I think the Cowboys would probably be my number one team on there, where I just go, expect it. You know, first off, I think just the new energy, the new regime, Mike McCarthy, everything like that, that's worth a win or two in itself, just right there, you know, in the first year. Usually new head coaches and a guy that's proven and won Super Bowls like that, you know, I think is going to give them a different look, a different attitude. Their defense is going to be a lot different this year with Mike Nolan, you know, and, you know, the bottom line is they got a really talented roster. They do. You know, no matter what, it's still got talent on it. Now it's just going to be about a head coach managing the game the right way, coming into games with the right game plans and things like that. So I think that would be my number one, man. And then, you know, after that, there are some good teams there. You know, I think the next two teams I look at more than any would be Pittsburgh and Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I think those are two teams, you know, as much as I'm hopeful for Denver and Oakland, you know, I think Pittsburgh and Indy just have a few more proven commodities about them that I trust more than Denver and Oakland at this point. Of course, with Big Ben back, and if he could stay healthy, and that defense is a Super Bowl-type defense, yeah, I look at them as going watch out for them a little bit. And, you know, with the Colts, again, I think the Colts were, you know, really a playoff-caliber team last year. But when Jacoby Brissett got hurt, you know, they lost the game there. And then when he got back healthy, he did not play well, and that really hurt their chances. But I look at their team as a whole and go, man, front seven, good. Offensive line, best in football. You know, some receivers and tight ends that are pretty good. Yeah, I just think the Colts are one of those teams. It's going to be dependent on Phillip Rivers and him taking care of the ball. But I think those are the teams that jump out to me more than others.
It's funny you bring up the Colts. And when you were talking about most improved quarterbacks, I was thinking, man, maybe Phillip Rivers. Not the fact that he'll improve as a quarterback, but his production may improve just because of the offensive line they have there in Indianapolis. They should have a really strong running game. I feel like if you look at his stats and actual production on the field, Phillip Rivers may look like one of the most improved quarterbacks going into next year.
It's a good way to say it, Amon. It is. And I you're right. I mean, it wouldn't shock me, you know, and I think the big point is what you said, the offensive line being better. You know, he was behind a crap offensive line with the Chargers the last 2 years. And there was a lot of games where you just felt like, man, Phillip Rivers is going to have to sit in there and make a lot of plays if they want to win this game. And he did it 2 years ago. And then last year, of course, he had some moments where he didn't do it and it hurt their football team. But I think he is with a team and a support system and in a system that he knows that hopefully he'll have enough knowledge and just realize I don't have to do everything for this team. If I get sacked or got to throw the ball away, we're good enough to the next down. We can run the ball for 5 yards still, or, you know, we'll protect long enough to where I'll be able to throw in a 3rd and 10 for a 12-yard completion and get the first down. You know, hopefully that'll be the case for Phillip Rivers.
Edward Mason, what stat would you like to see be officially recorded? I'm sure you can figure out a way to quantify F up the play. So this is the question from Edward Mason. So what would you like to see tracked out there? Maybe that's not tracked right now. He makes a good point, the F up the play guy. If you had effed up five plays, I don't know how you'd quantify that or how you would qualify for an F up the play. But what do you think? What do you wish could be tracked out there and developed into a new stat, you think, Chris?
Well, that's certainly at the top of my list. I mean, that's been one I've been, you know that. That's been one of my themes for the last 3 years of my life, really. You know, the F up the play stat, the disruption stat, whatever that is. Now, you know, it would take a little bit of a trained eye to know, okay, that guy F'd the play up truly. You know, like, I don't care if there's like, hey, the run is to the right? Let's just say the team's running to the right, and on the left side of the somebody busts through the line of scrimmage, and yes, he busts through the line of scrimmage, but it had no effect on the play, right? Like, hey, it was cool. Right. He did his job, but so you'd have to know when the guy is really ruining the design of the play or ruining and affecting exactly what's happening. But that would be my number one. I think the other one that bothers me is yards per attempt too much. I don't like that. You know, would rather see, I think yards per completion to me is a more relevant stat in a lot of ways than yards per attempt. I like yards per completion. I think it tells the story about what the quarterback is throwing more times than not than yards per attempt, which can be a lot of times finagled by run after the catch or whatever it may be. You know, you could throw 50 passes at, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, and if the receiver gets some yards after the catch, it's going to look like, oh, look at that. Yards per attempt are pretty good. He's getting 6 or 7 yards per attempt. And you want to go, no, but he's throwing the ball 0 yards. But then another quarterback could be asked to throw, hey, we want you to throw 50-yard bombs 50 plays in a row,
right?
Okay? And now if you only complete one of them or, you know, a handful of them, that number dropped. You know, so am I explaining myself? Did that make sense there?
You know, every stat, you got to be careful, right? Because every stat is telling you something, but it's not telling you the whole story. And you have to understand what the stat's telling you. That's why I kind of like all the next gen stuff that measures. It's kind of more measuring things than quantifying. It's like, how far are you throwing the ball down the field? How much separation are you creating and man-to-man coverage? Some of those things are interesting to me. So I was just kind of thinking the next level, what we may see in the future as far as stats. I would love to see hit force. I would love to see if you had little sensors on your body, how much impact you're delivering a linebacker or a defensive back or a safety, or even as a running back when you're promoting contact. I would love to see some way of tracking hit force in the NFL.
Oh, that would be cool. I think fans would love that. And yes. I mean, they would, because that, that's, people want to know. That's something that, like, you can't always get a feel for too, sitting at home on your couch. You know, maybe if you're sitting on the sidelines, you'd be able to tell the difference between a big hit or not. But I would think that with the, you know, we're taking track of concussions and the collision force and things like that, that maybe we see that here sometime in the future, where there is a little bit of a monitor in helmets or shoulder pads to tell you that. And I think fans would have a lot of fun with that.
One thing I think we're really close to, Chris, is, and I've seen some prototypes out there, I think ESPN's doing some work in this, is tracking the quarterback's head and eyes and where the quarterback is looking, so you can kind of tell, why isn't he throwing to this wide open receiver over here? Oh, because he's looking in this direction. And I actually think they have it for every position on the field. So that's next level stuff. If you can take a play and know where everyone's looking at that moment to see, why didn't he go over there? Oh, because he was looking in this direction. There's a lot of cool stuff they can do with player tracking that I'm looking forward to.
No, I agree. There is. It's going to go to the next level, I think, with a lot of that stuff. And, you know, Pete DiBalitolitis, I know he texts. He wrote, like, how about yards per attempt or air yards per attempt. That would make sense. That would be what I don't know if I did a great job of explaining it, you know, because what I was trying to say with the completion thing is you could have a quarterback who throws, you know, what do I want to say? 50 yard throws. And if he just completes one of them, you're going to go, oh, so it's 1 yard per attempt in that world.
Yeah.
Where I want to go, that's not telling you the story of what he's being asked to do or throw or what the offense is. Does that make sense? Am I making sense there? Or am I just totally fucking crazy on a Thursday afternoon and I'm losing my mind?
No, because it's the mistakes that you yell at me for making is just looking at the numbers sometimes and not looking at, like, Jimmy Garoppolo. Is he being asked to throw the ball down the
field?
That's
right.
Well, then
the
if he's not being
matters.
Asked to do it, then how do you say he can't do it? He's just not being asked to do that.
Right.
100%. And I think in football, I think that's what's tough about it. In football, the context matters more than anything. Even if we do get a F up the play stat, how do you know it wasn't just an offensive lineman that fell down if the defensive player really didn't do anything? You know, it's
that's
like everything is dependent
point.
On
that's
someone
I mean.
Else. So.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. That's why you would need the trained eye, though. That's exactly right, though. That is the point. You're right. Because we don't want to start giving a guy like F up the play stats and you go, well, the guard that was supposed to block him fell on his face 4 times. He didn't really F the play up. He just got lucky and got in front of a stupid guard or whatever it may be. And very good. That's very good. I think we hashed that out. I think we could have done some good for the statistical world there.
We did. We've just given you a new job, sitting down in front of tape and just adding all those up every week.
thank you.
Connor McGinnis says, looking at this year's drafted wide receivers in your analysis, I was reminded of Kevin White. He had the tools, size, speed, results, but flamed out, not currently on a roster. He wonders, who are one or two wide receivers that could be this year's Kevin White? And then he ended it with, I forgot to say, I love the show and the pod, which we got a lot of those, Chris, because we made a point to say last time, if you included that in your tweet, I would read it. So we got a lot of people loving the show and the pod, including Connor McGinnis. So I did look back at Kevin White. He was drafted 7th overall by Chicago. Amari Cooper was in that draft. He was 4th overall. You know, a rough career for Kevin White. He was injured all 3 seasons for the Bears. Caught just a total of, not many, his most in a year was just 19 catches, but he just had injuries, and there were separate injuries too. Stress fracture his rookie year, high ankle sprain, fractured shoulder blade. He had one good year in college, and people thought that that was going to be the building block to a huge pro career, but it just didn't work out for Kevin White. I think it's hard to say who could be the biggest bust here, because who knows what he could have done if he didn't have those 3 separate injuries.
No, you're right. You don't know. He certainly made life tough on him, definitely. I will say this, if you go back to my old podcast, at first there was a lot of people going, oh, Kevin White should be drafted over Amari Cooper. And I was like, no, we're not. We should not. Amari Cooper has specialness to his game. Kevin White, this again, back to stats and context, the stats were really good. But a lot of wide receivers have really good stats at West Virginia. I'm sorry, I don't mean to say that. You know, one of my concerns was you didn't see a lot of yards after catch and things like that. And that to me was an issue. So I was always in the camp of thinking that he got overdrafted. But you're right. I don't think he's the bust he is if he didn't have some bad luck. He had some bad luck. I still think he'd probably be on a team if he didn't deal with some of those injuries. And he just never got to get his career rolling. All right. I mean, listen, the guy that I think of especially that could be along those lines, the one I have big-time questions about is Jalen Reagor, the Philadelphia Eagles pick at number 21. You know, I wasn't as high on Jerry Jeudy as right. most people, but That's I true. Like Jerry Jeudy. I think he's going to be a successful NFL football player. I'm just not – in my mind, I don't know if he was worth the 15th pick of the draft. That's all I was saying with that. Now, Jalen Reagor, you know, I don't think he was worth the first 35 picks of the draft, let alone 21. It would concern me, you know, it didn't pop to me on tape. He's a little bit stiff as an athlete. You know, the stats and production, like everybody likes to talk about, and you know me, I don't always put all of that, but it wasn't anything special there either, you know?
Yeah.
And then the combine numbers weren't special either. So wait, when I see on film and go, okay, the guy's fast, but not like blazing like everybody's trying to tell me he's fast, because – in the right. early process, it was like, oh, Jalen Reagor is going to run like a 4.2 at the combine and do all of these things. I turned on the film and I just remember going, man, I don't think this guy's going to run a 4.2. Then he ran a 4.47. Then I sit there and film and go, man, I don't love how he comes out of breaks and does things like that. Ran a slower 3-cone drill than Chris Sims did at the combine. Not a real good thing to be running a slower 3-cone time than me at wide receiver. All right, and the 5.10.5, I believe, was slower than me. So when all those things start to match up a little bit with what I see on film, that scares me. It does. Maybe I'm wrong, and you know me, I'll be the first to say I'm wrong. But that's one that jumps out to me. The other one I'll be really interested to see is Laviska Shenault, a second-round pick by the Jaguars. You know, really strong, built like a running back. I'm not so sure he still shouldn't be a running back. I that's just one I just don't know. I'm not sure about. I'm really not. Yeah. I didn't love the tape, and I'll be interested to see how they use them. But those are two that jump out to me.
But when you get down to, you know, second round, 42nd overall for Shenault, I mean, that's not going to be as big
of
a –
No, it's not
if
like
you do
Kevin
miss
White.
On that, it's right. not going to be a Kevin White. And so,
right.
you know, the Henry Ruggs, for as deep as this class was, there wasn't any receiver in the top 10. Henry Ruggs, the first one off the board at 12. Also, Connor – at the end of his question, mentioned this too, and I'll throw this in here, Chris. Now that I guaranteed myself the question will be asked because he loved the show, I also got to say I almost dropped my jaw when Ahmed said that he is on Team Bidet. So he remembers me saying that I am on Team Bidet, and he almost dropped his jaw, which I don't think – I think of all my takes, Chris, is the least controversial take that I have out there. It just boggles my mind how more people haven't joined Team Bidet. To be honest with you.
Well, you know, hey, it's a very interesting, fun conversation. You know,
is it?
you know, you've talked about not showering some days and only brushing your teeth once a day. But
yeah,
hey,
yes.
One thing we know is your ass is going to be clean. That's for sure.
Very
so
clean.
You're good in that department. Very clean.
There is no competition between. There's no competition between the cleanliness of a water hose being used or dry paper. I could rant this for 15 to 25 minutes, but there's no, so wait, are you on Team Bidet, Chris?
I mean, I think if you gave me a choice, sure. I'd rather have that water shooting up there too than trying to, you know, chap my ass with some toilet paper. So I'm with you.
We just got a text from Pete. He's probably telling us to stop. Oh no. Pete says he almost bought one after that pod. His wife.
See, look at the effect you're having on the world. You have an economic value to the world. You're amazing.
His wife was concerned that the toddler would play with it, which is a giant concern. That because it is a very fun toy for anyone under the age of 5 or 6 years old. So that is a concern. More life tweeted this at us, Chris. Who is the one draft prospect where you think, how did I miss that? So who is the guy out there that you just were not convinced could produce at the NFL level that somehow has done it and surprised you the most? Who jumps into your mind first?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. You know, I mean, first off, I'll always be disappointed with my Dak Prescott evaluation. That's one that really bothers me coming out of Mississippi State. I think I fell in the trap of what a lot of people do. The team results, the way the offense looked, and, you know, then held Dak Prescott responsible for it. Even though I saw enough good where I was like, man, there's something to this kid. Yeah. I just went, oh, it's just not always there. It's a little rough around the edges. And I should have said.
I mean, you were not alone. You were not alone.
I know I wasn't.
Right? Every NFL team was basically the same thing.
But I learned, like, with Drew Lock last year, you knew how big of a fan I was from him coming out in the draft. But I learned that was a great example. Dak Prescott taught me to look at Drew Lock in a different way to where I went, wait, SEC guy on one of the worst teams in the SEC. And I see a lot of physical ability and things I like about this kid. Yeah, the game's rough around the edges. But, hey, Chris, remember you did this with Dak Prescott. Don't blame the quarterback. The team is a little bit of the issue here. It's not him. Right. I mean, it's not easy to go out there and look good when you're the lesser team on the field every week in the SEC. You're going to have games where you don't look good. So that would be one. And I'll tell you another one where I thought the opposite. Greg Robinson, you know, who now is involved in some off-the-field issues, but was the second pick of the draft, left tackle out of Auburn, went to the Rams. I remember evaluating him and going, he's going to the Hall of Fame. And I was wrong about that one. Those are two where I look at and just go, shit, how did I miss that? How did I miss those? But I try to learn from them and not make those mistakes next time.
Kind of related here, UF Jeff says, for people who have watched football all their lives, what are the first things to watch for when trying to understand the game better? He said, for example, formations. He says, best from Switzerland. So I am curious about that for, you know, the common fan, I think, for myself included, even though I played a little bit of high school football. You watch the ball, you see the quarterback take the snap, you watch him in the pocket. But when you, as a you know, you grew up in a football family, former NFL quarterback, how do you watch a game and what are you focused on the most?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is, like, when the offense comes out of the huddle, you're gonna look at the formation. Okay, what are they in here? Oh, okay, you know, three receivers. Okay, the tight end's here. All right, so I'm gonna look at that. And then from TV, I'm gonna try to take a look at, you know, probably the very next thing, the front seven, just to get some clues there. Okay, wait, where's the tackles lined up? Is there a linebacker showing blitz and doing things like that? So again, I've been fortunate to be taught and trained by a lot of good people. And of course was in the sport to where, you know, I think anybody that watches the game sometimes with me starts to go, damn, you see a lot, or damn, you could watch things in a hurry. But I think those are the things I look for more than not. And then within it, you know, hey, this offense, are they lining up in the same formation play after play? Are they motioning? Are they moving? Do the plays seem very ordinary, or do there seem like there's a little bit of a pizzazz and, you know, illusion factor to it, right? Because good offenses have an illusion factor. Whether it was Brady in New England, he's, faking a screen over here and boom, oh, there's Gronkowski down the middle wide open, or Kyle Shanahan's offense of like, faking a reverse, fake the run, and now Jimmy Garoppolo is throwing a 20-yard laser over the middle of the field. You know, those are the things I look for more than not. And then as the game unfolds, you know, just trying to get a big picture feel for the game without studying a film, just starting to go like, oh, man, you know, their offense is having trouble picking up that blitz, or – oh, they can't run at this guy. I kind of try to look at general themes that way, too, so I could talk about it on the show the next day on PFT when you're trying to watch a bunch of games and really know what's going on. I'm writing notes and doing all that. But, you know, it's a tough one to answer there. It really is. I've evolved watching the game, Ahmed. I went into the NFL watching the game like a fan. And I remember John Gruden and Jeremy Bates going, hey, dude, are you going home and, like, watching the fucking game like a fan and just sitting there? Or are you watching the game? And I went, like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, when the offense breaks the huddle, you should be talking about what formation is that. When you see the defensive lineman, You should know what blitzes might come because of that and those things. And that really started me off to go, wait, yeah, I'm not a fan anymore. I know some of this stuff. I need to start watching this game in a different way. And that pushed me to do it. And it's not an easy thing to do always.
It is not. And Pete mentions, you know, take your eye off the ball is the piece of advice that a lot of people are given if they want to take that next step in how you watch a football game.
I think so.
You watch in high school, you look for the pulling guard, and that way it can tip you off if it's a run. But it seems like so many NFL teams do so many decoy things that could be just as confusing as trying to do anything else because they're trying to throw off the other team.
You're right. You're exactly right. When I see a quarterback drop back to pass, to Pete's point, I don't sit there and just watch him and go, wait, when's he going to throw it? When's he going to throw it? As soon as I see him to drop back to pass, I'm already like, looking into the secondary to see if I can get a feel for the route combination and maybe see, is it a cover two? Is the safety rotated down? Whatever it may be. My eyes go there because one, the ball eventually is going to go there too, to one of those guys down in that way. But you can start to see, ooh, they played that coverage or ooh, he had this guy wide open over the middle. Why didn't he throw to him? He went to somebody else. So I think, you know, Pete Demolitis is, point there is very real too.
If given the choice, would you prefer to watch the game on the all 22 shot? Would you like to see the whole field? Yeah. Or are you okay with the way it's shown? You would like to see the whole thing.
Definitely. I was like that as a young kid, Ahmed. You know, when I first started out going to Giants games, you know, and I started going at about 4 years old, we sat in the lower tier, maybe about 30 rows up. Then one game, I don't know what it was. I was around 8 or 9 years old. For some reason, I sat up in the mezzanine level, the second level of the stadium. And I remember going, oh, my gosh, I love this. I could see the whole field. I could see when my dad doesn't throw to the damn wide open guy. And I have a good feel for it. So I can tell him what a stupid ass he was later when he comes home.
Yeah, this will be great.
And I told, this will be great. He'll love me. But after I did that, Ahmed, I sat in the mezzanine for every one of my dad's games for the rest of the career. I loved it. I told my dad I want to sit there. I love being able to see everything, and I certainly would love it that way now if I could watch it on all 22 TV. Yeah.
We're going to probably get that soon at some point. We're going to have the ability to choose multiple feeds and take the all 22, and I think that would be kind of interesting to and maybe some people wouldn't want to watch it for the whole game. But it'd be kind of cool to see maybe a couple series early in the game, your team from the all 22. And I think that probably is coming at some point. All right, here's a group of questions that I have just grouped and it says Chris Random. So these are just random questions from the fans out there. This one from Finn Weeks. What did it take for you to do the Lowe's ad with Kurt Warner? So he wants to know about what took for you, and that's well chronicled. You know, a little back and forth last year when you came out with your top 40 quarterbacks list and had Tom Brady 9 and Drew Brees at 10. Kurt Warner was one of the most vocal about disagreeing with you on that. But then you came together, you put all your differences aside and came together for the advertisement. How was that, Chris?
Well, one, I don't ever take these things personal. I don't. Yeah. You know, listen, I work hard, I study hard. I think I'm right a lot. I know I'm not always right. So I know whatever I say isn't in like the holy grail of stone and like there forever. Now, yeah, it made me mad that Kurt Warner did that last year because he tried to imply that I was doing it for clicks, you know, and then a few days later, his top 10 quarterbacks came out and he had Brees and Brady as 1 and 2. So I think that was probably part of the reason he was annoyed that mine came out. I don't know. I don't know what it was. Either way, I think mine ended up being more right than his. But
yeah,
I've never held it like, oh, my gosh, I hate Kurt Warner. What a jerk he is. It pissed me off for a minute. I'm not going to lie. But I'm not like that to where I'm going to hold a grudge on a guy forever. So when Lowe's approached me about the commercial, first off, who the fuck am I to turn down a national TV commercial, all right? And then you're going to pay me what to do it? Okay, sure, I'll do it. Kurt Warner's going to be it? I don't care. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm still going to do it. And we had a great day together. We had a fly down to Atlanta, Georgia to film that commercial. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, Kurt, again, he's a stand-up human being. He is a really good guy. He loves football. I don't agree with every one of his takes in football, but that's okay. I mean, there's a lot of people you're going to have some disagreements with. But I think there's a lot of things we do agree on, too. And you know, between him and Rodney Harrison, we had a lot of fun talks that day.
But admit, it was a little icy at first. It took you a little while to get into it.
I wasn't worried about me. I wasn't sure. I don't know Kurt that well. I wasn't sure how he would come in. But really, he came in. I kind of made a joke about it and addressed it right off the bat just so we could be like, hey, listen, it's not a big deal. Let's like just clear the air. And he didn't care and I didn't care and that was it and we moved on.
You go, hey, Kurt, let's just be cool. This is a lot of money. Let's not blow this for everyone.
Right.
Don't let whatever happened in the past ruin what's about to happen right now. That makes sense. This one comes from Darag H. O'Connell. He says, if you could have picked where you were drafted, where would you have gone? Loving the pod from Ireland. So he's out in Ireland. Wondering if when you were drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the third round, correct?
Yes, right.
Where would you have preferred? Where was your number one destination where you're like, man, I really hope they take me?
Well,
did you not have one?
No, I mean, I kind of didn't have one. I was willing to go like, hey, this is my dream. I can't wait to play in the NFL. I mean, you're just happy that you're going to get drafted or something like that. Right. Now, I'm not going to lie. The Giants were a team where, you know, they weren't in the quarterback market quite yet at that point. But I was still like, I don't care that my dad played for the New York Giants. I could deal with that pressure and go
home and play
in New York. I want to say that was that Kurt Warner's first year there, maybe in 2003? Let's look that up because I'm not exactly sure.
Okay, I'm looking.
You know, they draft Eli Manning in 2004. But
Kerry Collins started. Kerry Collins started 13 games in 2003, and then Palmer started three.
Okay. So it was Kerry. It was Kerry's last year. So hey, they were still going with Kerry to see where you know that could go. And of course, he had brought them to a Super Bowl not long before that. But I think ultimately, the teams that I thought legitimately were going to draft a quarterback that I wish would have drafted me. You know, and then here's the teams that I thought I had a chance to. The Raiders had the last two picks of the first round. I thought I had a chance to go there. The Baltimore Ravens were picking in the 20s. They needed a quarterback. I thought I had a chance to go there. The Chicago Bears, the same way. Drafting in the 20s, thought I had a chance. I think the one that I was most hurt by is the Bears. You know, and one, I'm a football traditionalist, as you know. I love their uniforms, like we've talked about. And, you know, Chicago is such a football city, and I love that. They ended up drafting Rex Grossman over me, and that's, hey, listen, I understand that. But, yeah, that was one that hurt a little bit because I liked the GM, Jerry Angelo, there at the time, the quarterback coach, you know, and, of course, the big city feel, me coming from the New York area, that was great to me. And it's the Bears. And who doesn't want to play for the Bears and eat some deep dish pizza? You know what I'm saying? It's the Bears and Mike Ditka. So that
might have. You might have played that first year too, because 2003, Grossman started three games. I don't know if it must have been at the end of the year. Chris Chandler started six of them, and then Cordell Stewart started seven. So there was a lot of opportunity there.
I think
in Chicago.
There's a good chance I might have got in there, but hey, it worked out for them too. Let's not, you know, Rex Grossman did bring them to the damn Super Bowl, so they proved themselves right with that pick. It was not a bad pick at all.
Roger Armio asks, my wife wants to know who's your barber. Chris, are you willing to give that up? They like your haircut. They like the short on the sides, and then you're going longer on top now, but I like
it. I go to Becker Salon. It's on Greenwich Avenue here in Greenwich, Connecticut. And Becker is the man that cuts my hair. Becker's my guy, man. Becker. He's awesome. He really is. And he always gets me tight and everything's good there. You know, he and his boyfriend run the salon and they couldn't be nicer people. They do my wife's hair. They cut my little boy and little girl's hair. So it's a family affair. Usually. And as you know, I got a haircut 2 weeks ago and I had Becker come to my house and he wore a mask and everything and he cut my hair out in our barn here on the property. So it's always good. And I'm due for a new one and I'm probably going to get one sometime here in the next week or so.
I think there are a lot of things that this pandemic and the quarantine are shifting in what we want to do. And we're just like, well, do we really need to have this? Or was this as important as I thought before? I think when it comes to haircuts, we realize we need our people.
We need our people to help us out because this is not going well. If you've tried to experiment yourself or if you're just letting it grow, which I'm doing here, I cannot wait for the day that I can walk back into the barbershop.
Yeah, but you look good with long hair. You know, Thanks, Chris. You can pull it off. I started looking at myself in the morning on PFT and was like, whoa, I can't take it anymore. And I, you know, to that point, I took a calculated risk. We had been very strict with the lockdown, and Becker, my hairstylist there, he was one of the strictest from the get-go. I knew that, and he was willing to come over and do that. So that was one of the first baby steps I took as far as seeing a new person. But I was willing to take that risk at that point, a calculated risk at that.
It's going to be so weird as things start to ease and just seeing how comfortable we really are with getting back into the real world. This is going to be as strange as this time has been up to this point, I think it's going to get even weirder, but hopefully we can get back to normal sooner rather than later. That was good, Chris. That was the AMA. There are more questions out there. I'm saving some because I know we're going to be doing this. We're going to be doing this once again. Oh, one more. This one was for me, Chris. Can I ask Ahmed a question? Ahmed, what is the best beach on the west side? Grand Haven, South Haven, Saugatuck. This is a Michigan question. Right up my alley.
I love it.
I'm going to say, so I spent a lot of time, one of my really good friends worked at Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And so I spent a lot of time in Holland, Michigan. The beaches there are pretty good. But I think Grand Haven probably wins out there on the west side. But I'll tell you what. Those Michigan beaches, if people have never been there, they think, oh, it's a lake. No, this is like an ocean, basically. And you really could, outside of not tasting salt when you go in the water, you would not notice the difference between swimming in Lake Michigan and swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. Waves aren't quite as big, but those beaches in Michigan, man, things that you say you miss about being back home, that's certainly one of them for me. But I'd give the nod to Grand Haven, but I'd say Holland's not that far behind for me, Chris.
The beaches look cool there. It does. I've never swam in Lake Michigan. I certainly would. But I just feel like, you know, there's been some movies and some TV shows and things where I've seen it. I think the one that jumps to my mind is American Pie 2, right? I know you don't watch movies, but American Pie 2, they yes. are going to a beach in Michigan, and it looks really cool. I remember thinking that. So I'd hope. How cold is it in the summertime in that lake?
It's cold, but I think it does heat up. It's been a while since I've been in Lake Michigan. But you know what's funny? It's like I've come to like the salt out of the oceans, like the Atlantic Ocean and Pacific Ocean. So in a weird way, I miss it when I go back to Michigan. There's like, where's that salt in my hair and the taste of it? But I love Michigan, especially in the summertime. All right, Chris. That's
right.
I think we may have done it in an hour today. I'm not totally sure what the final time is on this, but it got close.
Got close. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it was a fun show. I appreciate all the fans throwing out the AMA questions. That was great. And we're going to continue to do this, like you said. But next week, we got the Chris Sims top 40 quarterbacks coming into play. We're going to be talking about that. We got another fun exercise about some of the best players in football, too, that we're going to start to visit.
Yeah.
Like a 64 player best players in the NFL bracket, and we're going to get the fans involved to do that too. So that's something to look forward to. But everybody enjoy the Memorial Day weekend.
One more thing before I let you go. I almost forgot it. We got coming up on Friday, if you're flipping around the channels on NBCSN, we're going into the vault once again. We got some classic baseball games that NBC aired back in the day, the Kirk Gibson home run game off Dennis Eckersley in 1988. We'll show that. I did an interview with Oral Hershiser that will play throughout that game. Went to the Bill Buckner game in 86. I talked to Ron Darling about that one. And then, Chris, a game that I'm sure you were glued to the television for as a Yankee fan. 1996 ALCS game number one, the Jeffrey Mayer game. He took that Derek Jeter ball that was going to be caught at the wall by Tarasco and hauled it in for a controversial home run. You remember that, Chris?
I do. Way to go, Jeffrey Mayer. You the man. Take that ball. Screw the Orioles. Yeah. The Yankees, baby. Woo! Yes. I was a sophomore in high school. And, of course, the Yankees hadn't been good for a long time.
They hadn't been. Really good. It had been 15 years since they had won a division title. and Joe Torre, his first year with the team. And so when you think it was like, oh, the Yankees got another break again. No, they hadn't been good for a while.
No, they had not. But that started their run. And, man, that was fun being in high school those years when they were basically winning championships every year and doing that. That was a special team. And Derek Jeter with that number two, that was a big influence of me wearing number two as an NFL quarterback. So that I'm going to be tuned in between the vault, the baseball stuff, and we got some of the Notre Dame vault stuff coming out tonight, I believe. That should be pretty cool watch for sure. But good podcast, bro. You the man. You look good.
Hold on, Chris.
You just should have buttoned your top button, man.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, can you do it for the end? Do something. Let's go.
Woo, oh, no. Baby. I'm choking right here. Oh,
you are choking. Literally. You're choking yourself. Oh, man. You just went from a 6 to a 9 and good looking. Man, you look good.
I look like a Mater D or something like that.
Yeah, you have a bigger, stiffer collar than me. But be good, dude. Have a good weekend.
You too,
all right?
Chris.
Peace out, everybody there. Be safe. Memorial Day weekend. Have fun. We'll see you next week.